to advocates pushing to end the practice of giving life sentences to juveniles in Wisconsin. Following changes in more than two dozen states over the past decade, a bipartisan bill with about 30 signatures would prevent a court from sentencing a youthful offender to life without the possibility of parole. What factors should courts consider when sentencing young offenders? 800-642-1234. And please be mindful that this conversation could be disturbing, talking about violent acts. Domine Meek was imprisoned nearly 28 years for a murder he committed when he was 15. Released in September 2020, will be on extended supervision for the rest of his life. And Domine is a team leader for the Wisconsin Alliance for Youth Justice. Domine, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Good morning. And Preston Shipp is here, senior policy counsel for the Campaign for the Fair Sentencing of Youth, working to ban life sentences without parole and other extreme sentences. Preston, welcome to you.
Thank you for inviting me to join you.
Preston, you've been an advocate working in this space to end these life sentence laws on the books. Wisconsin very much on your radar. How do you feel when you look at Wisconsin? How do you feel about juvenile justice as you see it in our state?
Well, I'm extremely excited to be working in Wisconsin. You know, that we have seen a very rapid national trend over the past decade away from life without parole for kids, which is basically condemning a kid, you know, to die in prison. And so we have seen 25 states already pass this kind of legislation. And so Wisconsin has this great opportunity with a bipartisan bill. To say that in Wisconsin, kids should not be sentenced to die in prison.
I'm wondering if we could just take a moment here and you first share your story of nearly 13 years ago. You were an appellate prosecutor in Tennessee, and then you had this real eye-opening experience while teaching a class at a local prison. What happened?
Yeah, well, thank you for asking about that, because I went to law school to be a prosecutor here in Tennessee. I very much believed, you know, in the tough on crime rhetoric, you know, and you do the crime, you do the time, and cared a lot about public safety and the rights that victims have, you know, who have suffered harm. And so, you know, that was my career. I didn't see myself really ever doing anything different. But then the college that I attended started an inside out program where they offered college classes at a prison here in Nashville. And the guy who ran the program was my major professor. And so he invited me to come teach. He knew I was a prosecutor, invited me to come teach a pre-law class. And that was really the first experience that I had outside a courtroom with people who were incarcerated. And it just made all the difference in the world. You know, when you put your chairs in a circle and you start sharing stories and you start hearing about the context in which crimes are committed. And what I was confronted with, you know, when I got proximate, I was confronted with a group of people who were remarkable, who were good, who I was rooting for. I would have been happy to write letters of recommendation. They, even though they were serving, many of them were serving very lengthy sentences, even life without parole, they had invested heavily in rehabilitation and programming. They were just waiting for an opportunity to prove that to somebody. And that's what these bills are about, especially for children, is that, you know, we don't give up on kids because, you know, kids can commit, you know, violent crimes, but they don't forfeit their humanity. They're still kids.
Domine, you hearing the words remarkable and good, I'm wondering if you can share your story. You know, as a 15-year-old, you pleaded guilty to the crime of murder.
Yes. So I was 15 when I committed my crime. I killed an innocent bystander while attempting to kill another member of an opposing gang. Not that my victim was a member of the gang. He was, like I said, an innocent bystander. I went on the run for 2 weeks after doing that, turned myself in, went through the juvenile justice system, was ultimately weighed into adult court 4 months after I was arrested. Spent the next 5 months in the county, was Milwaukee County Jail. And ultimately pled guilty to a first-degree intentional homicide. 2 days after I pled guilty, I was sent, after I was 2 days after I received my sentence of life in prison, I was shipped off to Dodge Correctional Institution to begin serving my life sentence. It was on my 16th birthday, mm-hmm. and I was housed with, you know, in the county jail as well as in prison. At the time, I was housed with some of the pretty big dudes. You know, it was a pretty scary experience, frightening experience, but.
At 16, did you realize what that life sentence really meant to you?
No. I had no idea, no concept of, I barely knew what it, realized what it meant to turn 18 or 21, you know, let alone that I would be 43 at the oldest, at the youngest when I saw parole, or that I could actually die in prison. I had no concept of a future beyond maybe 5 years past my the age of 15 or 16 at the time. So no, I had no concept of that.
You also read a very much remorseful statement in court to that judge and to the family of the victim that gave you, I understand, the possibility of parole. Do you remember those words or writing those words or what that was like?
I remember some of it. I don't remember everything I said.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I said then, and I still do believe that I'm sorry, which is all I could tell my victim's family, mm-hmm. wasn't enough. I do remember taking accountability for my actions, which I still do. And I remember there was a poem, it was a lot in it. Mm-hmm. I do remember the remorse, which I felt then, and I still feel now. You know, I hurt a family, you know what I'm saying? I left a hole in a family that still hasn't healed, will never heal. You know, I recognize that the pain and suffering I caused them and caused others in my community. You know, there were other persons who were injured in my crime and who, or even if they wasn't, just the fear that I increased in my community and the lack of safety that I increased in my feeling of safety in my community, that's still going on. You know, I caused a lot of trauma, you know, and I still live with that. And I still regret that deeply to this day.
Preston, what do you hear in Dominique's story?
You know, Dominique, he's remarkable. I know Dominique, and he's remarkable, but he's not unique. You know, so much of what he shares is very consistent with what other young people who have caused harm, what they experience. You know, when they reflect back as adults on those moments, you know, they talk about how they did not appreciate really the consequences of what they were doing, the potential for harm, the lack of impulse control, not being able to regulate their emotions. They almost universally share an experience of trauma, of suffering harm themselves, of being, you know, under peer pressure. Yet, you know, they have this profound potential as young people to move beyond those moments and mature the way that we all do. Mm-hmm. And so you give them some time and they all of a sudden they're in their mid-20s, they're in their late 20s, they're in their early 30s, and their brain has fully formed and they feel a profound sense of remorse. And they want to do whatever they can to try to atone, you know, for the harm that they have caused. They want to try to make things right. And so Dominique and so many people in our Incarcerated Children's Advocacy Network, it's not just that they've gotten out and are moving on. You know, when they're released, when they get that second chance, they're finding ways to invest in their communities to try to make a difference. Yeah.
Preston Shipp, Campaign for the Fair Sentencing of Youth, Dominique Meek with the Wisconsin Alliance for Youth Justice. You can join in, 800-642-1234. What do you see in juvenile justice reform? What does it mean for Wisconsin? We'll pick this up in a minute on the Ideas Network. In It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's pick up the conversation about efforts for juvenile justice reform in Wisconsin. Advocates seeking to end the practice of giving life sentences to juveniles. Still time to talk about youth justice informed by your experiences in the criminal justice system. 800-642-1234. Domine Meek of the Wisconsin Alliance for Youth Justice and Preston Shipp with the Campaign for the Fair Sentencing of Youth. They're with us for about nine more minutes. Domine, back in the 90s, when you were sentenced, there was truth in sentencing laws that came along that increased prison sentences by requiring inmates to serve out at least 85% of their prison sentences without an early release. And that was targeting you, truth in sentencing, essentially eliminating parole for offenses. What do you remember about that? And what do you say to truth in sentencing?
I remember, thankfully, it came after I had already been incarcerated. But I met many guys who are affected by truth in sentencing, who's going to die in prison unless laws are changed and grace is shown. And these guys, I said before that, as a representative for the guys in prison, I don't think I do. I'm just not one of the best. There are guys in prison who could speak better than me, who could do this job, do what I do so much better, who can be out here contributing to society in ways so much greater than what I can do, than what I am. And they're going to die in prison. They were 14, 15, 16-year-old when they committed their crime, and they are not the same people they were when they went in because of truth in sentencing. And we, what Wisconsin told our children at that time is that we're worthless, that we're irredeemable. And that's sad that we, as a society, as a state, we threw away our kids, that we feared our kids that much. When the trauma that we suffered as juveniles, as kids, that informed our decision, not cause it, but definitely should be considered as mitigating factors, wasn't that we were considered super predators as children. You know, we were kids. We did violent and harmful things, and not diminishing the crime at all, but we were kids, and we don't have to be feared. We needed help. We needed medical treatment, and most of us didn't get none of that while we were incarcerated. Wasn't able to get any of it while we were incarcerated.
What I'm hearing you say too, Domine, you know, we weren't born this way. So many factors contributed in the upbringing, in the environment that you lived in.
Yes, many of us experience physical, mental, emotional, and sexual abuse as children. Many of us experience varied degrees of poverty. Some of us were literally raised in the streets and on the streets, raised in gangs and things like that. And when it's no different than kids over in the Balkans during the wars over there that raised around violence and shooting, or raised in some parts of Africa as children, as child soldiers and things like that. We were that in America for some of us. You know, we lived every day hitting the floors when gunshots rang out, seeing our friends, sometimes our very family members, killed in front of us. You know, or being told, given guns and told to go kill somebody ourselves by those who were older and things like that. The gang culture in America that many of us grew up in is in many ways no different than that. And again, this doesn't excuse what we did, but the trauma that we experienced, I would hope that American citizens, Wisconsin citizens, that the empathy they feel for children in other cultures and other countries, they would feel for their own citizens, their own children here in Wisconsin, and do for us and give us the same treatment that they would like to see them children elsewhere receive, which we didn't receive when we were sentenced. We were called predators.
Domine Meek with us, team leader for the Wisconsin Alliance for Youth Justice. Preston Shipp is here, senior policy counsel for the Campaign for the Fair Sentencing of Youth. Preston, we heard from Lauren in Burlington, called in, couldn't stay, and Lauren's friend was brutally murdered by a 14-year-old. And the DA wants to let the girl go when she turns 18. Lauren is wondering if there are certain people who shouldn't return to society.
Well, you know, I hate to hear that story, and my heart goes out to Lauren. And you know, this is hard work that we do, because you know, folks are not going to get life without the possibility of parole or other extreme sentences unless you know there has been grievous harm done, and we want to hold space for that and mourn, you know, when lives are lost. We work with victims and survivors of youth violence every day. And it is, you know, you want there to be, you know, some measure of healing. You know, I think what this bill focuses on is the question of whether there should be opportunities mm-hmm. for young people who commit harm to demonstrate that they have been rehabilitated, that they do not pose any ongoing threat to public safety. It's not an automatic, you know, where after a certain period of time, everybody just gets to go home. You know, what this bill does that representatives Novak and Bowen and Spiros have introduced is it says that when you're dealing with somebody who is under 18, too young to vote, too young to sign a contract, too young to serve on a jury or get married, when you're dealing with a kid, that after 20 years for a homicide crime, they get a second look, 15 years for a non-homicide crime. And there is no guarantee that that person, you know, is going to come home. They're going to have to demonstrate that is in the interest of justice, that they do not pose a threat, that they have been rehabilitated the way that Dominique and all these other folks that we work with have. I think that the tough on crime policies that you were talking about a minute ago, you know, they were born out of this myth that there is a certain class of children, overwhelmingly applied to Black children, who cannot change. And we know that that's a lie. We know that those policies were based on an untruth. But we were sort of led to believe that justice is a zero-sum game in which you can either care about the rights of victims or you can care about rehabilitation of people who cause harm. You can either care about public safety or you can care about second chances. And that is not how justice works. Mm. We can hold those values all together and work for something better for people who have suffered harm as well as for people who caused that harm.
Preston, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on.
Domine, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Domine Meek, team leader for the Wisconsin Alliance for Youth Justice. Preston Shipp, senior policy for the Campaign for the Fair Sentencing of Youth. And you're listening to the Ideas Network.